The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to Family Feud, part of the Paris Style podcast family. They might not be brother and sister, but they sure do fight like they are. Here's your hosts, Keely Orr and Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to another edition of the Family Feud podcast. I'm Shotgun Spratling here with cousin of the pod, Chris Trevino, and Keely. Oh, wait. No Keely.
No Keely.
You know what that means, Chris.
Helium Boys.
And Chris, please explain the Helium Boys to our faithful listeners out there.
Yeah, you've probably heard me mention Helium Boys multiple times on this podcast without any real context. So here is the context. Helium Boys started when we would do like those Zoom podcasts back before we could be in person. And Keely would be late a lot of the times to our Zoom podcast. One time she left us there for like 30 minutes, legitimately. So we would just talk. We would just have conversations, felt like a podcast, and I just made the joke that we're going to call it the Helium Boys because we gas each other up like a balloon in the helium, whatever. So gassing each other back up and forth, balloons, they float up. We bring each other up. We bring each other higher. That's kind of the origin of it.
We're rising to the sky like the old man and Up.
There it is. There it is. Now I feel sad. Why would you just remind me?
We're skipping to the part where the house is rising. We're skipping the opening montage. Come on.
First 3 minutes in, it's like
so devastating. Which, again, we could talk about movies on this podcast because Keely's not here, who's never seen a movie.
I feel like this is the moment we're either going to really appreciate what Keely does every day behind that little work board, that little soundboard you're doing right now, or it's just going to be like, that was super easy. Maybe we should just branch off. There's only two ways this thing is going to go. We're either going to really appreciate her moving forward and be nicer to her, or it's just going to be a whole lot worse. We're just going to be like, we can do this. We did it. We did it without you.
I don't know if we'll ever be nicer to her. Come on. She'll get too big of a head. Can't do it. I got to keep her grounded. But this is still the Family Feud podcast, even though this is a Helium Boys episode. It's part of the Peristyle podcast family. As a reminder, you guys can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Megaphone. Leave us a 5-star review. Tell us how much you like us. Tell us how much you like the Helium Boys podcast. Share it with your friends. Let everyone know. You can also email us questions, submissions, your thoughts, random thoughts that you have to our podcast at familyfeudpod@gmail.com. You can tweet or DM or email me your questions if you make sure to note that it's for the Family Feud podcast, and we'll try to answer as many as we can on the upcoming episodes. But Chris, let's jump into this off-season Family Feud / Helium Boys episode. USC football spring camp is done. But the gears keep churning. And we got to talk about the transfer portal, because the transfer portal giveth and the transfer portal taketh. USC making some more moves. The roster continues to morph and switch a little bit. You lose Stephen Carr. He enters the transfer portal. Great job by Keely Orr on that one, breaking the story there.
Props to her. She got that.
Yep, definitely there. And, you know, it's official as of on Thursday that he has signed with Indiana. He is joining Dylan McCullough, reuniting with him there. And USC also picks up a transfer in safety Chris Thompson, coming from Auburn. Another Texas product is coming west to USC. You might as well just call it the West Texas Trojans right now. I don't even know why they're calling it USC anymore. It just seems like there's so many guys. What have been your takes on the transfer portal overall, as you've just done a transfer impact rating for going into this off season? What have you thought about the transfer portal and how USC's kind of attacked it this year?
Yeah, as we've talked about, USC has done a really good job building this transfer class, and they've had some departures as well. You know, Muneer McClain, we talked about him, I think, our last podcast. He's gone. Caleb Tremblay was another departure, and now Stephen Carr added him to that list. And I'm not surprised, just because when I was looking at some of the major offseason questions, one would be, how many more Trojans are we going to see jump into the portal? And usually, a lot of that happens, you know, right after the season or right after spring camp, because then you kind of get a sense of an idea where you stand with the team going to spring. Then after spring, you can kind of reevaluate your options. And, you know, we had been hearing about Steven for a couple months, even, you know, before spring camp, that maybe he was thinking about making that move. This was right after Keontae Ingram had joined the program. And, you know, that was kind of an interesting look, just because you already had Steven Carr coming back. You had Vavae Malapea. You had two veterans. And then you're adding a high caliber, starting caliber running back in Keontae Ingram. So obviously that was going to ruffle some feathers in that room. That was going to shake things up. And I think as we saw throughout spring camp, it really seemed like Vavae and Keontae were kind of emerging in those top two spots. Steven had some moments. You know, I think he had a really good spring game. Mm-hmm. But I just think those two were just a little bit more in spring camp. And then Steven obviously got hurt going into the end of camp, so he didn't get as much time there at the end. But I'm not really surprised that move happened. I think at least one of those guys was going to move on. I don't think Keontae was going to move on. I think it was going to be one of Vavae or Steven were going to see their way out, or they were going to stick around. But I didn't really see that, because they have that one more year. And I think that's a really good landing spot for him, Indiana. You know, reunited with Dylan, who very well respected, was one of those rare home run hires that Clay Helton made that no one really knew about. He ended up being incredible, and then went on to the Kansas City Chiefs, did really well there, won a Super Bowl, wants to come back to college because that's where he wants to connect more with players. He's a guy who's always been about a big player guy, so I think he's getting more of that experience working with kids in college as opposed to, you know, professional grown men.
Working with his kid as well, as yes. His son will be at Indiana as well this fall.
And I think that shows just kind of the impact that Dylan had in his one season here, especially with Carr, who knows him. He's like, hey, I want to go play for him again. So I think that's a really good landing spot for him. As far as the safety, Chris Thompson Jr., coming out of Duncanville High School, coming out of Auburn, I think that's a really good pickup, just because I'm not convinced with the safety depth right now. You know, you lost a big guy in Max Williams this spring. That's a devastating blow. And I think picking up Chris Thompson was a reaction to that. I think you need more depth there. You're getting Greg Johnson back, but he's coming off a knee injury, and you want to be a little bit cautious with that. And I think he's really going to help solidify that depth and maybe even play the role that Max played, maybe being that, you know, that co-starter kind of role, maybe the guy they bring in with dime packages. Again, we don't really know where he's going to start out, but my guessing is he's going to be getting a look at nickel. And you're bringing in an older guy. He's not like a freshman. He's had 1 year in college. I mean, he wasn't like a starter or anything, but he knows what it's like to play in college. He knows what it's like to be a part of a college program. So I think he can come in right away and provide that depth, and if down the line, possibly be a starter.
I mean, one of the interesting things I thought about Chris Thompson is I'm going through his 24/7 page to kind of look up the recent articles about him. The comparison on his evaluation, TJ McDonald, former USC Trojan. If USC could get the production that they got out of TJ McDonald out of Chris Thompson, I think fans would be very happy about it. It'll be interesting to see where he fits. The competition in that safety, the back seven, the back seven been very thin on bodies at cornerback, but the inside linebackers, ton of bodies there, ton of competition in that safety room as well. I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how this defense continues to morph. I think you're going to see in the next couple of years, you'll see some transfers out of there because there's so many talented players coming in. And, you know, for the tally now for the transfers, it's 8 out for USC and 7 in. That includes Connor Murphy, Caleb Tremblay, Abdul Malik McClain, Paliya Naitiote, Chase McGrath going to Tennessee as well. Marquis Stepp also going on the way out as well with Stephen Carr. But on the way in, you now have multiple receivers. You got Taj Washington. You got KD Nixon. You're bringing in Malcolm Epps as a tight end / wide receiver. So that could be an interesting one. That's a guy we haven't really talked about too much, but it's kind of interesting. Where is he going to fit? That's kind of what we talked about last time we talked about him. Ishmael Sofscher coming in. You're adding Xavion Alford to that safety position. So another safety coming in there. Maybe does this tell you something about Xavion Alford that maybe he's not as talented as they thought, or that, you know, he wasn't able to take over that starting spot like they expected? Or is it just let's continue to add quality depth to the position?
I think it's let's just add quality depth. And as we know, they love their Texas boys. I love how USC looking at Texas transfer portal is like, ooh, we got to get them. And Tennessee is looking at USC transfer portal players like, ooh, we got to get them. This love triangle.
Everybody is looking at Tennessee's transfers right. Like, ooh, we got to get them. Because they got some high-end transfers that have ended up in Alabama.
I feel like the USC coaches just have a beeper on alert every time a Texas transfer player, like, we got to get him. Let's go.
And not even just the University of Texas, because you're looking at Taj Washington, you're looking at Katie Nixon. Both those are Texas guys. Chris Thompson, Texas guy. So it really does feel like it's the West Texas Trojans. And it continues to mount more and more to me that they just value players from Texas more. I don't know if it's just a familiarity and, hey, we know them better. We haven't got a chance to get out and scout as much with this new staff. So we feel like, because we've seen these Texas players a little bit more, and we can trust the coaches were a little bit more, but they value that more right now. Now, maybe that changes once they get some kids on campus for camps and stuff in the summer. Maybe it changes when they're able to, when the dead period opens up, they're able to get out and actually do some on-campus recruiting as far as the high schools and stuff. Maybe that kind of starts to morph a little bit, but right now it definitely is. Texas is on a different level, a kid from Texas versus anywhere else right now. Even the local kids that, you know, that USC should be familiar with, they're going out and grabbing up these transfers, wide receivers. And you got guys like Tetrarola McMillan, you got CJ Williams, you got some big name wide receivers locally that USC's not, you know, the front runner necessarily locking up those high-end recruits right now. They're going out and getting some guys that have played college ball, which is one part of it, but also that are Texas kids.
Yeah, and bringing these guys that were big-time recruits out of big high school programs helps them get their foot in the door in those bigger high school programs. I mean, USC and this new staff is still searching for, you know, those big-ticket Texas recruits. You know, they got a couple here and there, but they're still looking for, like, a Devin Campbell, the five-star offensive guard out of Texas, out of Bowie, Texas. They're still looking for those big-name Texas guys. And I think bringing in guys like, you know, Xavion, who was at Shadow Creek, I believe the name, that's a really good program out there. And then Chris Thompson, he's from Duncanville. That's a premier program out there. They put out talent every year. So getting their name, getting guys to get their names in there. And obviously with Texas, it's all about, I mean, it's recruiting is all about relationships everywhere, but recruiting in Texas is especially about relationships with these high school coaches and these coaches out there in Texas. Texas guys love to recruit Texas guys. That's just how it is. So I'm not surprised that they're focusing on Texas, but I'm going to be interested to see how much, you know, like in the spring when they can go on road trips again, how much time they're going to be dedicated in Texas as opposed to California. Will we be seeing a lot of guys roaming spring practices in California where we are, or will all the action just be in Texas? It's going to be interesting to see how they balance that.
And how much is your budget going to that? Because that's one of the things that's, you know, talked about this with Greg Biggins a while back about kind of the proliferation of teams coming into Southern California and stealing some of the top players when USC was down for that 2020 class. He said, you know, Georgia normally wouldn't come over here and recruit because you're talking about the flight and cost, and like, you have a set budget, but now the budgets are increasing for one across college football. But when teams see that there's an opening, they're going to go and try to cherry pick a little bit, but you're not going to make as many trips unless it's fruitful. USC right now, I think they're going to spend a lot of money on that flight back and forth to Texas to go and recruit. And that's a very large state to recruit, too. It's not like you can just fly in and, okay, we'll hop around this metropolis area and see everyone we want to. No, that a lot of kids spread out in a lot of different areas in Texas as well.
It's not Maine, baby. You can't just hit the whole city or the whole state, baby. You got to go and just bring me back some barbecue. I would appreciate it if you brought back some barbecue.
So USC right now has 11 players on the current spring roster that are from Texas. Obviously going to be adding some more with these transfers that are coming in, but we'll see if that number continues to rise as the staff is here, or if you do start to see once things open up and you can get out and see some other kids, maybe that plays into it as well. The transfer portal has been a fascinating watch from afar, just seeing how things have progressed. And each time a big-name offensive lineman goes in there, there's one earlier today, yesterday, that from, I believe, Marshall was a freshman All-American. And I saw it, and I was like, that guy's going to be super coveted. Because even though USC probably is putting out feelers, because even though he's an offensive guard rather than a tackle, offensive linemen are so scarce, high-end offensive linemen.
Premium top end. There's just hard to get them.
I mean, it's very much like NFL free agency. It's the one position where there hasn't been a ton of talent continually cycling through the transfer portal. I feel like other positions, you are seeing that a little bit more. Even at the quarterback position, you're seeing some high-end names go through there. But at the offensive tackle in particular position, you're just not seeing it. So when one does go in, everyone, even if you've got multiple tackles that you feel comfortable with, everyone's like, oh, let me see if I can get this guy as well. It's been really fascinating to watch. It's very much like NFL free agency for some particular positions as well. And USC right now, you know, 8 in, 7 out. So we're seeing that the transfer portal is definitely going to be something a part of their future, that they're going to be continually attacking. Talked about this a little bit with Brandon Huffman on the last Heard It podcast, but just the fact that you've seen what they can do against college guys. You don't have to take a flyer and say, okay, let me see if an offensive lineman can gain 30 pounds. You know, let me see what they look like when they lose 30 pounds in this strength and conditioning program. You see what they look like already a year or two in to a strength and conditioning program in college. So it's much different there. Just continues to be a fascinating read for me, watching the transfer portal and seeing how teams are attacking it, what teams are doing really well with it. And I would say USC's doing a pretty good job at it. I don't know. What was your overall assessment of where they stand right now? Because you're going to lose some guys, but I think they've done a good job of going out and attacking some needs and some wants as well.
Yeah, like you said, it's pretty even. 8 out, 7 in. That's a pretty good ratio. And they're getting players that They needed interior defensive line help. They got it. They needed safety depth. They got it. They needed wide receiver depth. They've got it. I don't know if you could say they needed another running back, but they got one. They got a good one, a really, really highly valued one. And I think a good sign of that is a little bit of a plug here. 24/7 just dropped their top 100 transfer portal rankings. You're talking about the transfer portal. We got transfer portal rankings, baby. We're ranking everything. Everyone's getting ranked. And 5 of USC's 7 transfers were ranked in the top 100. It was initially the top 50. Then they expanded that to the top 100. That can tell you we're going to have our own top 247 for transfers at some point. But 5 in the top 100, that's pretty good. Did you get a chance to look at the list? Yes or no?
I glanced through it.
So you know who's ranked the highest out of USC's crop?
Keontae Ingram.
Yes. He is the only one who remained in the top 50. He's number 29, took a little bit of a drop, 3-spot drop, but I think that's fair. I think Keontae Ingram is the gem right now of this class, a former starting caliber running back out of Texas. That's a good spot from number 29. And then Xavier Alford, he was in the top 50, but he fell to number 55, just outside, a little bit of a 12-spot drop. And then Sopcher, he was also in the 50, the initial 50. He fell 11 spots to number 57. But 3 guys in the top 60, that's pretty good. Thompson Jr. made his debut. He's at number 69. And then Taj Washington, he made his debut at number 71. So that gives you our 5. That's pretty good. If we're looking at the guys who have entered from USC, Paliia Nyaoteote, he's number 10. That's a 1-spot jump from him. He's still shopping around. You know, Texas was thought to be the landing spot. Ohio State now seems to be like the likely landing spot, but he's still swimming around in that portal. Marquis Stepp, he was number 24 initially. He makes a drop down to number 41. He has since signed up with Nebraska. He had a little bit of an injury, so he missed most of their spring, I believe. And then Stephen Carr, he made his debut at number 39 on that list inside the top 50, which I think is a fair spot for him. So yeah, 5 guys in the top 100. Do you think that's accurate, that ranking of them? Ingram, Alford, Sopcher, Thompson, Washington.
The one guy I'm interested in that I think could be ranked higher, and I don't know because I haven't seen him, just seeing his stats, seeing, you know, some highlights, but Taj Washington, he's a very interesting player to me. Curious to see what he's going to look like at USC, where they line him up, you know, what they can use him, how they try to use him. You know, I think he can be used in a couple different ways. Looking at the wide receivers, now there's been some notable names from the wide receiver position. Wandale Robinson is the top overall wide receiver going from Western Kentucky to Kentucky, and, you know, he was a dynamic offensive weapon, punt returner as well. But the second name on the wide receiver list, you might notice this one, you might recognize this one, Puka Nacua, former USC commit, all the way up at number 14 overall. He hasn't really done anything in college, which is interesting in the rankings that, you know, how they decided, and I don't know exactly how they went about this process, but, you know, how much do you factor what they did in high school? How much do you factor what they've done so far in college? Taj Washington is a guy who has had success already in college. Now he's going to make a big jump up from the AAC to the Pac-12, but, you know, Puka Nacua hasn't done anything. Taj Washington had. How you kind of factor those? You know, I thought there were some other familiar names on there. You know, Zach Charbonnet, a guy from local Oaks Christian that UCLA picked up, number 16 overall. So it was kind of interesting just to look at the rankings and say, you know, I recognize a lot of these names. And for Palaiaiaiote to be as high as he has when he has struggled in his career. Now, I still think that if he was healthy this past season, he would have taken a big jump forward after a couple games, just like we saw from Raylan Goforth and Kanaya Mauga. And maybe that's exactly what, you know, the guys that were ranking these see from him. But I just thought it was interesting. Some of the guys that are high, some of the guys are low. You know, some of them have produced already in college, some of them haven't. And, you know, how do you kind of factor that into the rankings? Not exactly sure how they went about it, but it is definitely interesting. And I do think that Keontae Ingram is definitely USC's top transfer. He's got a couple years left of eligibility, and I think that's positive for them because he and Vavai Malapai are not in the same class like Vi and Stephen Carr were. So I think if you're just looking at it as a straight trade right there, I think that's a positive for USC just to break up the two classes there. I think they have similar type of games, Keontae Ingram and Stephen Carr, as far as they can catch the ball in the backfield, they can break some tackles, make some guys miss. But I think Ingram definitely showed out and was the better performer there. I think Stephen Carr definitely upgraded, though, because he's going to go to Indiana. And you think about it, Dylan McCullough comes in there. He's a first-year running backs coach there, so he doesn't have any experience, any knowledge of the guys that are already there. But now Stephen Carr, he does have knowledge of. So, you know, if he ends up being the one that has the ultimate say in how much playing time or who starts, I think that Stephen Carr has an advantage there versus the guys that are already on the roster at Indiana. So I think it's a great landing spot for him. He has a comfortability with Dylan already. So I think that he's going to feel comfortable. He knows the language already. So he knows what Dylan's looking for. All those things that can give him an advantage, I think it's a perfect landing spot for him. And you go from, you're already going to be in a competition with three or four other guys. So why not go somewhere else where you're going to be in the competition? And that's what he's going to do. So I'll be, you know, up early on Saturday mornings, you know, watching some Big Ten Network, you know, watching some football to see Indiana and what they're doing, to see Stephen Carr and how he's playing there. Similar to how we were watching Illinois for a couple of years, watching the Amara Bebe brothers, Trayvon Sidney, Oluwole Bitiku, you know, all the USC transfers that ended up with Lovie Smith and his crew there. So it's going to be interesting to see how the transfer portal continues to develop, especially now with the one-time transfer rule. You know, everyone can go and not sit out. So you're going to see a lot of impact transfers, even more so now. I think the transfer portal is having a big impact, and it's going to be interesting to see how it continues to change and morph as we go.
We have a Stephen Carr question later in our fan like mailbag, so we'll get back to him. But I would love to watch like a web series of just Stephen Carr, this SoCal kid, experiencing Indiana for the first time. I just want to watch it. They don't have to be long. They could be like 5-10 minutes. I just want little snippets of his life in Indiana.
So an interesting thing, I went out and interviewed Trayvon Sidney and Oluwole Bitiku and Josh Morabebe the last time that USC played, I think at Notre Dame. And it was interesting talking to them about making that move. Wole in particular is not a fan of the cold. And he was like, that was the worst thing ever is when winter arrived there and, you know, the leaves are gone and suddenly there's snow outside.
It's no joke.
Josh Morabebe is from Georgia, Trayvon Sidney from SoCal as well. They both said that, you know, I don't have to go to a ton of classes. This was pre-pandemic because I'm a grad student, so I do a lot of things online. They're like, I just try to stay bundled up as much as possible and not go out and do anything. They're really just focusing on their craft. So I'm curious to see if that's the same thing for Stephen Carr. Is you make it, it's kind of a business decision when you transfer rather than the recruiting process early coming out of high school. So how do you go about settling in? Is it just a business decision? You're going and you're working your 9-to-5 as far as your football work and your homework, and then, you know, instead of Stephen Carr going out and bobsledding or anything in Indiana when it gets cold.
See, I want that. I want the I want Stephen Carr like a Calvin and Hobbes like tobogganing down the snow. But I feel like we've talked a lot about transfers, still have more on this podcast. So now I'm gonna let you run with this. I'm just gonna turn the timer on because I know you want to talk Pac-12 commissioner. I know you want to talk about the end of the Larry Scott era. Da-da-da-da. And the new old busted, new hotness, old busted, Larry Scott, hot newness. I know you want to talk about it. You brought it up. So I'm just going to start a timer. I'm going to go make some food, and I'm just going to let you go. So Shotgun, I cannot pronounce the name, so I'm going to throw it to you. But you want to talk about the new Pac-12 commissioner?
George Kliavkoff.
Yeah, we'll A&R that in for me. You want to talk about George? So I'll let you talk about George. What were your reactions? I know you have thoughts on this.
Yeah, it was another transfer. Transfer of power, potentially back to the Pac-12. Because
nice.
At least if he follows through with what he said in his opening press conference, that's a 5-year down the road. We'll see if that actually happened. But at least the early look at what he's going to do is all positive. He answered all the questions and that he knew the answers to. And he said, I don't know the answers to the ones he didn't have. He said, I'm going to get to work on that. He said, you know, he basically took a page out of the Mike Bone book, and maybe USC sent this one up to the Pac-12 network in San Francisco, but said, I'm going to go on a listening tour. I'm going to go listen and learn, and then we'll try to make, you know, adjustments. But he talked about all the key points that USC fans should be excited about, but all the criticisms of Larry Scott, he basically did the exact opposite. Oh, the college football playoff? Yeah, I think it needs to be expanded. Oh, the TV deal? Yeah, we got to do work on it. You know, everything that Larry Scott would hem and haw and try to talk around, he was direct with it. He answered the questions, and I think it's definitely headed in the right direction if he follows through with, you know, the way he won the opening press conference. It's an outside the box hire, a guy that's coming from MGM International, you know, he's worked with the casinos, the entertainment industry, and now he wants to come and take over. Now, he does have some sports background. I think it's an interesting hire, but from the opening press conference, he definitely won that. And hopefully for USC's sake, for the Pac-12's sake, and for college football as a whole, college sports as a whole, he follows through with it, because the landscape is much better when there's actually a power conference in the West. And it's not just once you get past Texas, then there's no more United States as far as college athletics, except for those sports that only the West Coast plays in water polo and beach volleyball. So I think it's really important for the Pac-12 to be strong, to be the conference of champions, but be champions in actual team sports that everyone cares about, the moneymaker sports. You know, he was asked, what's the greatest strength? What's the greatest fault of the conference right now as you're coming in? He said, the greatest strength, we have these great universities, blah, blah, blah. Good answer, whatever. He said the greatest fault is the biggest weakness is the last time they won a national championship in football or basketball is eons ago, basically now, especially with the attention span and how quickly things cycle through. The Pac-12 has been not relevant for the better part of a decade now. Since USC, since Pete Carroll left USC, the Pac-12 has had blips, Chip Kelly, Washington getting there under Chris Peterson, getting to the college football playoff, but then, you know, getting beat up pretty good. But they haven't had no consistency, so I think that's a huge thing for them. I think the Pac-12 started to turn a corner in the basketball side, potentially, with the three teams in the Elite Eight and how well they did to get a little bit more recognition, to get a little bit more notoriety. And hopefully, you know, Kliavkoff comes in and continues that, not only in basketball, but definitely in football and in women's sports and in everything else, you know, going forward. I thought USC made a really good hire for women's basketball, and I think it just followed through. The Pac-12 just followed suit right behind it with a good Pac-12 commissioner hire. So some positive notes in the offseason for USC fans and for Pac-12 fans in general.
Shotgun, I had the timer running, legitimately, 3 minutes and 36 seconds. Can I ask what your first reaction was when you heard this person's name that I'm sure you had no idea? Can you tell me what
exactly,
your first...
That was exactly it. Who? Who is... Why is this not Oliver Luck? That was kind of my first reaction.
Why is this not Oliver Luck? Look, you've already said everything. I don't really need to add on this. It felt like you know, a program gets a new coach, like an embattled program. They get a new fresh start. It's hard to lose the opening press conference because you just got to say the right things. You got to say what the fans have been wanting. And he said everything the fans have been wanting. The Pac-12 fans.
That
you know,
isn't always the case, though.
Right, right. It's not a gimme, but it's really hard when you've had a coach that you just don't want anymore, and you get a new one. It's like a fresh new toy. It's really hard to mess up the opening press conference. And he did a slam dunk. But I just want to say the biggest upgrade for me is the name. We're just upgrading the name. You're going from Larry Scott, which is like a legitimate, just like a pen salesman name, like just a boring pen salesman name, drives a Mitsubishi, whatever. No one cares. to George
Klyavkov.
Klyavkov.
I believe that's how you pronounce
it. That's a badass name. That's like legitimate, like bad guy villain John Wick name. That's like a Russian mafia name, and like you don't want to do business. You better come to the table correct.
Oh, get him on the college football playoff committee. And then like he just is like gives you that look and he's like
just the stare.
He starts speaking in Russian a little bit.
He just needs a little bit of Russian accent.
Suddenly a Pac-12 team gets into the college football playoff. It's amazing how that works.
You don't want my Pac-12 team? Why you don't want the Pac-12 team? You have two SEC teams. Why not a Pac-12 team?
I only asked for one.
I only asked for one. You give them two. I just want one. Maybe we visit your mother. Maybe she will tell you that there should be one Pac-12 team. This is not fair.
Very
See?
Good. Very
chills.
Good, Chris.
Chills. I just watched a movie. I watched Golf Nobody Club. Last night. There was a Russian mob boss as the enemy. So I got Russian in my brain right now. So yes, that's all I'm going to say about that. The name, great name.
Yeah.
Just basing off the name. I like where we're headed.
Won the press conference. We'll see where they go from here. I think the Pac-12 network is a big step there. How do they attack that one? How do they attack the, you know, the rights deals that are upcoming? Are they trying to get out of the current deals? Are they trying to renegotiate earlier? There's a lot of question marks still, definitely. But early reviews, positive notes there. So hopefully you can continue on that because, like I said, I think that it college sports and college athletics is much better when it's a national event rather than just an East Coast event.
Shotgun, ready to play a game?
Ooh, a game?
Ready to play a little game I call over-under?
Keeley never lets us play games. So
no,
see,
it's always like stick to the script. I've tried to pitch like game show like games. Not fully formed ideas, to be fair, but I still have thoughts of doing like a game show type game for an episode of the podcast. And we have the time now. It's the off season. We need things to talk about. But since she's not here.
And even when you come up with a great segment, she makes you go all corporate.
Yeah, what's up with that? What's up with that? I'm not seeing any of that money. I'm not seeing any of those corporate dollars in my pocket. I'm not seeing a new Tesla in my driveway. I don't even have a driveway.
I just know that a lot of people have told me that they are very interested in your Twitter product to change old tweets so that you can jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, the bandwagon blocker, I believe it's what it's called. Mm-hmm. There's been so many, but yeah. Someone's going to really, like, somebody smarter than me is going to listen to this and, like, actually make some of these things that I've, like, come up with. And they're going to make $1 billion off it. I'm going to be so bitter and old, and I'm going to die penniless. But besides that, this little game, over-under, I got a bunch of over-under numbers that I want to throw at you for, like, 2021 season. So, example, like, Keenan Slovis, over-under blank number of passing yards, and you just got to go on the spot. You got to tell me, is it gonna be over or under? We're just kind of like projecting stats right now, and please don't go super long on each.
I gotta put
the Keeley hat on. Please don't try to go 3 minutes on each one because there's a lot of them. There's just like quick little. You got to give me your rationale for why you're going over under.
Okay.
So I got some offensive ones, I got some defensive ones, and I got some team ones. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with offense, obviously.
Okay.
I was a wide receiver, so we got to start with.
Okay,
offense.
Fair enough. Keenan Slovis. Let's start with Keenan Slovis entering year three, maybe a first round draft pick, over under 3,700 yards in 2021.
Ooh, that's a really tough one. Chris, see, this is why you're good at this. You always come up with really tough either ors. And why is that a really tough one? Because he threw for 3,500 yards in basically 10 games as a freshman. So he should be right over that. He's like, right, yeah, no problem. Especially if the offense takes that second year jump that we were expecting last year that never happened. But he has to stay healthy to be able to do that.
He's
gotta
stay healthy.
So I'm actually going to take the under on this.
Ooh, okay.
I'm still not sold on that offensive line.
But I made you think about it, which is good, because I think you could very easily go over this.
Yeah, if he stays healthy, if I get a caveat, then yeah, I would go over.
Okay.
I think the production will be there when he's healthy.
Over under 32 passing touchdowns.
This is the same thing, so I'm going to have to go under on this. I think 3,700 and 32 kind of fit in, you know, especially looking comparing to that freshman year, it was 3,530, and like I said, he played basically 10.5 games, I guess, because he played half of the Fresno State game, but didn't play two snaps of the Utah game. So he played in 12 games, but only really played 10.5.
Moving on, Drake London. I'm really high on Drake for 2021. I think you're in the same boat. But let's go over under 1,100 receiving yards. This will be his first 1,000-yard season. Does he get it done? Going a little Michael Pittman-ish numbers here. I believe Pittman had around 1,200. But I'm going to go 1,100 right now.
I mean, getting to 1,000 is tough.
Yep.
So I'm going to go under.
Ooh, okay.
I think he's going to be between 1,000 and 1,100. And I could be completely wrong about this. I mean, depends on how much they spread the ball out. With the fact that he's the returning weapon, but he is moving outside, I've changed my mind now. I've talked myself into going over because he's the primary weapon there. I think that he will get above that. I don't know that he gets up to Pittman's numbers, the Biletnikoff finalist. He was, what, 1,275 yards? So I don't think he gets up there, but maybe he's in between where Amon-Ra was, over 1,000 that year in 2019, and Pittman was nearly 1,300.
I need a name for that when you disagree but then talk yourself into it. If anyone has a name for that, I want it to be like a simple word. See, Shotgun just did a whatever.
That should tell you that, like, this is not all like pre-organized, like, oh, take the over on this one or on this one. No, I'm talking my way through them.
Got to do his touchdown. So over under 10, double digits.
What did he have last year? He had three last year.
Which is surprising. I feel like he had more. I feel like he had like five or six, but no, three.
I'm going to go under.
Okay, you think he's going to get like 8 or 9?
Yeah, because I don't know. They will have to use him in the red zone as a weapon on the outside and throw the ball up there and let him go with that jump ball, which is something they haven't done. And maybe that, with the fact that he's practicing more outside, you can do that. That's where you get a lot of touchdowns as a wide receiver. I mean, look at Amon-Ra St. Brown's touchdowns, you know, those four in the game in the first quarter against Washington State. I believe three of them were within 20 yards, you know, so, and two of them at least were, at least I think two of them were slot fades. So that's something he could catch, you know, where you're going up over a defender, you beat him by one step and then use his big body. If they move him and put him in the right places, they could, but I still haven't seen that yet where we're trying to get this guy the ball. Every once in a while, Amon-Ra St. Brown, that Washington State game, they were definitely trying to get – he hadn't scored yet. We had a discussion about whether Eric Cromanhook or Amon-Ra St. Brown would finish with more touchdowns.
Oof.
I didn't win that one.
Big oof.
But they purposely wanted to get Amon-Ra St. Brown in the end zone that game. Are they going to do that with someone like Drake London, or is it let's run the offense and wherever the grass is green, that's what we'll do? He's such a mismatch problem that he is the type of guy that if you attack mismatches, he's going to perform that much better.
Let's keep the mismatch going. Michael Trigg, highly valued freshman, people are excited about, you know, being pitched for that Drake London role on the inside. Over under 3.5 touchdowns.
I'm going to go under.
Okay.
Just because I don't trust freshmen, even highly touted freshmen, until I know that they're going to play and play a significant amount.
Okay.
Because there's just so often where, you know, a guy like Brew McCoy comes in and you think, okay, he's going to immediately get in there and immediately make plays because we've seen how good he is in high school. And then it just doesn't translate that first year. So I'm going to wait until I see him on the field, you know, making plays consistently before I think that he's going to get over any significant stats.
London had 5 his freshman year. Just want to throw that out. That's why I was throwing it out there, trying to bait you in there. Just want to see what you would do. Bit interesting. But if Michael Trigg is dominating in the summer.
If London wasn't here.
You would think.
Then I think the path is much greater. Okay. But I still think there's a possibility that you move London back inside because you've seen the success there, whatever it may be. You know, Brew McCoy, Kyle Ford is, you know, has been cleared, which is great news to be full participant. Those guys step up, and now they're the outside guys. You move London back inside, or you're using him kind of in and out, and Trigg just doesn't get those opportunities. Whereas if London wasn't there, you see, oh, there's a big pathway for Trigg to step in. I think right now he's the tight end rather than that inside slot receiver that you want to use a big body, and I don't know if he's ready to be a blocker yet.
Okay. All fair. Keontae Ingram, over under 1,000 all-purpose yards. Did it 2 years ago at Texas.
This comes down to Mike Jinks. do we trust Mike Jinks's word that we're going to have a bell cow running back and we'll find a second guy that will relieve him every once in a while? Are you going to continue to mix it up and have three or four guys that get, you know, 50 or 60 carries in a season rather than one guy getting 150? If he gets 150, then yeah, he can go over 1,000. But I'm going to say, I'm going to go under just because all the offensive staff, I'm going to throw Mike Jinks in with the rest of the offensive staff that says, yeah, we're going to do this. And then we're like, when is that going to happen? We're going to rotate receivers frequently. When? We're going to, you know, switch the offensive lineup consistently. When? Like, and Graham Harrell has said similar things. It's like, when are you going to do these things? They tell us that they're going to do certain things and make some different switches and rotations, and we don't see them. So I'm going to go off what we have seen and what we, you know, I'll trust what I've seen with my own eyes rather than what they're telling us will happen.
Okay. Last offensive one. Not that it's offensive, but it's on the offense.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Over under 2.5 touchdowns for Jackson Dart.
I'm going to go over.
Okay.
And this goes back to my Slovis answers. Slovis stays healthy, then obviously no, he's not getting there. I don't think there's some special package, red zone package for Jackson Dart or anything. You could do that if you really wanted to. You know, even when you have an established guy, Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, you wanted to put in special things to get a talented freshman opportunities. That's not really been the case with Clay Helton. There was the Sam Darnold package early in the Max Brown starting year, but he was a redshirt freshman. He'd been on campus for a year. I don't know that they're going to do that. I just don't feel like that's been something that they've wanted to do. And the way that Clay Helton talks about quarterbacks, being a former quarterback, like, you don't want your quarterback looking over his shoulder. You know, we're not going to split reps, you know, all these type of things. I don't think that if Keaton Slovis stays healthy, he'll get there. But I don't think that Keaton Slovis stays healthy with this offensive line. So I'm going to go over.
I was thinking more like just garbage time.
What
but
garbage
time? You went full conspiracy theory. There's going to be a garbage time game. I say that now, and I'm going to hate myself for saying that right now.
But when has there been?
Don't clip that.
When has there been? That's the thing. Like, again, it goes back to track record. You're like, okay, this offense scores over 30 points a game. The defense was really good last year. There should be, you know, garbage time, but they let teams linger around way too much. So, you know, outside that Washington State game last year, there hasn't been many opportunities for those second and third string guys to get in there and get opportunities. And you have to get up a good amount early for a quarterback to then throw the ball and score, unless you're counting on him doing some read options down by the goal line to score his touchdowns, which you could. Talented enough.
Let's move into the defense.
Defense.
I thought we were going to go one more. You can't just do one chant. Over under 3.5 picks for Chris Steele, who declared, you know, kind of want to have a big season before jumping to the draft. So putting you on the spot for him, over under 3.5 picks.
How many does he have in his career?
One. He had one last year. Talanoa led the team last year with four.
Again, really good number by you, Chris. Putting it kind of right on the spot. It's where I would see him at, somewhere in that range. I'm gonna be confident in him. I'm gonna say he goes over.
Picks are so hard to judge. You're like,
yeah, because you can have the tip picks and stuff, right, where, you know, the cornerback doesn't necessarily do anything, and cornerbacks are that much more difficult because if they're on an island now, Todd Orlando put his guys on islands a lot, so, you know, I think that teams will try to throw with the, you know, blitz packages and stuff that USC uses. He'll get some opportunities. I'm going to go over. I'm going to trust that he can do it.
Okay. Okay. Let's get a little linebacker action here. Kenai Mauga, over under 85.5 tackles. Had 41.
In six games last year.
Basically, that was basically five games.
Yeah, because he didn't really play in the first one. So the other question there becomes, who is taking tackles if he doesn't get to it? You know, Talanoa Hufanga had a good number of tackles this past season.
62.
Yeah, a good number of tackles this past season. Are you trusting a safety to come down in the box more? Do you need those linebackers to make more plays? I'm going to go over. I think he's going to be the leading tackler among the linebackers. Will that be the leading tackler on the team? That's hard to say. And I think one of those, you know, Isaiah Polamalu or somebody, depending on how they use him, you know, one of those safeties that fills that Talanoa role, if they try to use that as the role, you know, a guy they use down in the box a little bit more, then I think they could finish with the most.
Yeah, I would probably take the over. I just feel like Malgo's going to have a good season. I think he's going to be close to that 90 mark.
And I feel like he is more entrenched in his spot than Raylan Goforth if one of those other guys comes back. Jordan Iosefa, Solomon Tuliala-Pupu, Elijah Winston. If some of those guys come back and start getting rotated in a little bit more, that I feel like Malgo has proven himself a little bit more over his career. So,
and he's proven to have some of those like monster games. He's had a couple monster games.
When he plays Utah.
When he goes off. Let's move to the defensive line. Over under 10.5 sacks for Drake Jackson. Big.
That's a big number.
That's a big number. I'm just saying, top five prospect, potential prospect for the 2020 NFL draft, Gil Brandt, putting it out there. A lot of first round action. I think 10.5 sacks has put you in that first round discussion fairly well. So, shotgun. 10.5 sacks, Drake Jackson. Full season at this outside linebacker hybrid spot. I'm trying to stall for you because I see you frantically Googling. Only had two last year. I think 5.5 the year before in limited time when he got injured.
So the one thing, this is what I was looking up. I was looking up Chase Young's numbers.
Interesting.
So Chase Young, his sophomore season had 10.5 sacks, right on the mark there. And then his big season where he was in the Heisman contention for a little bit was 16.5 sacks.
All right, we're not going that far.
No, but I think that's an interesting track record to look at. Maybe he's a year behind where Chase Young is. If he wants to be a top five pick, this is the year where he needs to break out. And so I'm going to go with over.
Oh, okay.
I think he's going to be right on. But this comes down to, this is the difference between him and Chase Young. Ohio State has produced pass rusher after pass rusher after pass rusher, and everyone is getting to the quarterback. Sacks are so much about not just beating your man, but someone else beating you. You have to have two guys beat their man most of the time, because occasionally you can, from the blind side, you whip an offensive tackle, you whip the left tackle, and the quarterback doesn't see you coming. Otherwise, the quarterback steps up in the pocket as you're speed rushing around the outside, or he shuffle steps outside the pocket when you go inside. So you need that second person there. And I think that USC can do that with Nick Figueroa, done a tremendous job of getting to the quarterback. Corey Foreman coming in, how much of an impact can he make immediately? I'm sure there's an over-under in there about him coming up.
You know me.
If they can reel in JT Tuimoloau out. You know, and Brandon Huffman talking to him on the Herd It podcast. Plug, if you haven't listened to that one, you definitely should. It's a really good listen, really fun chat with him always, but some really interesting stuff in there, I thought. I don't know.
Look, he's plugged it like three times already. Go listen to it. It's great.
Twice.
Go. There's going to be a third one. Oh, listen, okay. There's going to be a third one by the end when we get to our mailbag question. I guarantee it. And put some respect on Tuli Tuipulotu.
Yeah,
He could be a dynamic pass rusher too in his second year. He showed some stuff. True freshman year. This year, I expect big things from him coming off that edge. So a lot of pass rushing. And then Hunter Echols can help you out too if they move him around like they did in 2020. There's options.
Yeah, and I think that's what it's going to take. It's going to take other guys being able to get back there as well. It can't just be Drake Jackson, because then if he's the only guy that is doing anything, double teams.
Yeah.
Maybe even triple teams. You know, that's how you shut down an elite pass rusher, is you add, you know, the tight end chips on you now. The running back is coming over to help out. And you have, the guard is paying attention out there if they need to come and help out. Schemes can be really focused to shut down one guy. Now, you may give up something to someone else, and that's why it takes a second guy. It takes a third guy. And when the entire defensive line is attacking and doing well, that's when you end up, was it 2017, 2018, with Uchenna Nwosu. He was a beast coming off the edge, but you had Porter Gustin on the other side who was having success. You had success in the middle with Rasheem Green. So you're getting pressure from all three areas on the defensive line, and now you add in Todd Orlando's blitz packages and stuff. I think that he definitely can. The one thing that may threaten that is that if they're really successful with all those things I just said, maybe they just get spread out so much that he doesn't get that number. Maybe it's not one guy that gets a bunch, but you have four or five guys that get, you know, six or seven.
Yeah, good point. Speaking of the triple team, I want someone to be so dominant that they have to like make a separate, smaller offensive line off the edge. off the butt of the left tackle. Do you think there's something there? I think I revolutionized, like, if Chase Young coming off the left tackle, then I make a smaller offensive
That's called
line.
A two tight end set where both the tight ends.
No, I want five people, a second offensive line.
Right.
Might be revolutionary. Right. Just think about it.
It feels like you wouldn't have any offensive weapons if you're using a second offensive line.
I don't know, but if it works. Talked about sacks. You mentioned all that great stuff. So let's get into more sacks. Over under 4.5 sacks for Corey Foreman, the number one overall player.
Drake had 5.5 his freshman year. Is that right?
Drake had 5.5, yes.
Then I will say over.
Oh, okay. That's a big number for a freshman. Not even Thule had that number, but I'm putting a little more on Corey just because of his stature as a number one overall player.
And again, that goes back to all those things we just said. Yeah. You know, if they're having success getting to the quarterback with multiple guys, then someone steps up. I actually thought Kanai Mauga coming in as a freshman, I thought he was a guy that might surprise and get 3 or 4 sacks. Because he was playing coming off the edge initially, and I just love the way that he was attacking off the edge and beating offensive tackles in his first fall camp. Never really transpired, but that's the kind of thing that you're looking for. You're looking to see, are other guys getting there? And it opens up some opportunities because you go, now Corey Foreman is a little bit different than Kanai Mauga just as far as the name recognition of the freshman that you're getting. You know, the offensive tackle on the other side is like, oh, it's a freshman, I got this. And maybe, you know, gives up. It only takes one. It only takes one snap to get beat. So,
it's a grown man, though.
He's a grown man. It's a little bit different. Name recognition, too. Everyone's been like, zero. That guy's wearing zero.
Zero. Over under 11.5 tackles for a loss for Nick Figueroa. A 2020 breakout. Seven last year
in 6 games.
And
I think he's not going to get the attention that's going to stop him. It's going to preclude him from getting to that number again. So I think that he's going to get it. I think it's going to be over. And maybe I'm putting a lot on this defensive front.
We are. You've taken the over on every one of these. So,
and part of that is my confidence in the progression of the guys under Vic Soto. You're seeing that defensive line, the defensive front has been, you know, been the group that I think has grown the most in the last year with this new coaching staff. So I'm putting a lot on Vic Soto and I'm putting a lot of guys on those guys in the front, but I think that they can do it.
Now we're moving to the team ones. Over under 34.5 points per game for the offense.
Over. I mean, there were what, 33 last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to go over.
Okay.
Now I'm talking myself out of it.
Look at that. He's doing the reverse thing.
Well, they don't have Elijah Vera Tucker anymore. They don't have Austin Jackson anymore.
I love how it's so quick. It's like something in your brain is like, no, you idiot. Take that back right now.
I'm still going to go over. I think that the addition of Clay Maguire, they're going to figure some things out to be able to run the ball better, and then they'll be able to score the ball more consistently than they were last year.
If you're just like 15% better in the red zone.
True. Like, yeah.
Just 15%.
I mean, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1, if you can just mix it up a little bit and pick up some of those, and then those ones where you're at the 30-yard line, they become a field goal, you know, and the ones that are in the red zone, you know, you get the first down, you end up scoring, you know, that 25% of the time there, you definitely, you're adding 6 to 8 points a game there, so I think they can.
Over under 21.5 points per game allowed by the defense.
Where were they at last year?
26. That's a big drop.
I'm going to go over that number.
Okay.
I don't think that maybe they can improve. Maybe they'll be around the same. We'll see the impact of Talanoa Hufanga, how much of an impact, you know, not having him makes. How big of a jump can they make in year 2? Too many factors, too many question marks, I guess, for me to make that jump all the way up from 26.5 to 21.5.
But you think it's in that window?
Possibly. I don't that one's a tough one for me. If you would have said it stayed at 26.5, or maybe even put 20, if you put 24.5, that's where I would think that they'll end up, which would have made it very tough whether it'd be an over and under.
Okay. I think I'm just big on this defense for next year, so I was just reflecting that in my over under 25 turnovers for the defense.
Turnovers are so difficult to how many did they have last year?
I believe it was like 14.
14. 28. Are they going to get to that?
Look, if you're banking on the sacks, I think you're banking on a couple sack fumbles, maybe a couple under duress throws.
True.
Like, I'm just being devil's advocate. You can do what you want, baby.
I'm going to go under. 25 okay. is just a really high number.
Okay.
That's elite defensive status, though.
That's elite defensive status.
Because that's creating more than two turnovers a game.
Over under 4 yards per carry in the run game, which they haven't done since in the last 2 years.
Then I'm going to stay under.
Okay.
Just going to go off track record here. Even though I think that there's some positive potential there with Clay McGuire, maybe switching up some of the things that they do in the short yard situations, which we saw a little bit of in the spring. But too many questions on the offensive line. You know, even though there's 4 starters returning, there shouldn't be too many questions. There still are way too many questions on the offensive
line. That tells you all you need to know. There's 4 starters that are still going like, what's going to happen?
Are those starters even going to be
starting
in the same spots at least?
Over under 99.5 rushing yards per game. They were at 97, around 97 last year.
I'll go over.
Okay.
Because I think you'll get a couple of teams that you can run the ball against pretty effectively, and I think that'll help boost up the numbers, or you get up a bunch and you're able to, you know, you just sit on the run out the clock, so you run the ball a little bit more.
And if they improve their short yardage, that's a boost.
True. I mean, it's a couple extra yards there, but it's an extra set of downs. And then you run it on first down for 3 more yards, and suddenly you're 3rd and 1 that you lost 2 yards on. Now you've gained 6 yards. So, you know, those things can quickly add up. What was the number they talked about wanting last year? You know, after seeing LSU and Alabama, you know, how they ran the ball. I think it was like 170 or something like that, 160, 170. That Clay Helton
that
said
did not
that,
age well.
Yeah, it did not. It was after the first couple games. They're like, yeah, this is what we want to average. And they were a little bit below that. And then they ended below 100. But I think they'll go over that.
Okay. And my final one, which I like, although you might just be like, oh, that's totally over under 1.5 special teams touchdowns.
Over. 12
you
games?
I think they'll get 2.
I think they'll get 1 in return and okay. 1 in a
block,
you know, some kind of scoop and score or something there. I'm going to have a little bit of confidence there. I think one of the things that we didn't get to see a big development in was the special teams necessarily because of the lack of time that they were able to have.
Still solid, though.
Yeah, solid, which is all you're asking. That's all you're asking. Get everyone on the field and don't make huge mistakes that are going to cost you. I mean, they weren't outstanding last year. You know, Parker Lewis was okay. He was okay. He was probably good for a freshman, if you want to look at it that way. He wasn't great. He didn't come in, you know, make every single field goal. So there's places where they can still improve for sure. And I think the return game is another one of those. I think that a little bit more time, you know, just having guys out there, you know, having more time to practice those type things, which you probably cut out a little bit of the special team stuff in, you know, the abbreviated fall camp that you have, the practices where, you know, everyone's having the COVID testing and it just seems like, you know, you're not taking any extra time to do special teams. So I think that you'll see some improvements on special teams again this year too.
2020 was just the basics. 2021, you get the razzle dazzle, you get the spices.
The question is the returners. If Gary Bryant Jr. is healthy, I think that's a potential there. He can make a special play. Is there someone else that can make that special play? They still don't have the Adoree Jackson who's going to make the play on his own. Maybe you think Gary Bryant Jr. can do that. I'm hesitant to put that on him.
I'm in on him as a returner. Guy's electric. And I think even if he's not healthy, you got Katie Nixon, who we were kind of like, in terms of the offense, didn't really have those big plays, but I think he could be a dynamic returner. He has experience there. Good speed, make guys miss. I think he could be a weapon in the kick return game, especially with Steven Cargon, who was one of your primary kick returners. There's a spot there. I think we'll see him contribute there.
But I think both of those guys, and at least what I've seen of Gary Bryant, you know, I didn't see him in high school. In the games I saw him, he didn't have any kick returns or punt returns for scores. You don't have that Dante Hall, you know, a guy that just makes people miss and creates a touchdown on his own because of how elusive he is. Like, that was Adoree. Adoree can make guys miss. He could leap over, you know, a Notre Dame kicker on his way down the sideline. I think that they can scheme their way to it, and good blocking, I think they definitely can return a touchdown. I just don't think that it's going to be a one-man show as far as the touchdown being scored. I just haven't seen that yet. And maybe Gary Bryant, I know you and Gerard both believe he has that in him as a returner, but I haven't seen it yet. So I'm a little bit hesitant to say that someone like that, because that type of player can give you multiple return touchdowns in a season themselves.
Okay, Shotgun. Those are all my over-unders. You got through that well. They are now officially on record.
We're on record.
We're on record.
Oh, geez. That means we're going to come back to this, aren't we?
Oh, yes. We'll probably come back to this after Keaton throws for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns.
Hey, that sounds like a fun season to cover.
I think that means he's in New York.
Quite possibly.
I think that means he's in New York.
And that means USC's playing well, and their offensive line has kept him healthy, which is always something we want to see everyone healthy. But also, for me, taking photos, that means a lot of good photos because there'll be a lot of touchdowns.
It means a lot of good photos. You're right.
All right, let's jump into fan questions. We'll run through these a little bit quickly just because we're around the hour mark.
Relatively quickly.
Well, a little bit quickly. Gustavo asked, how many DBs does this team need? I don't know if that's a frustration or a legit question.
I read it as frustration.
Because USC picked up Chris Thompson Jr. out of the transfer portal, another safety. With the addition of Chris Thompson Jr., he wants 4 down linemen and 7 DBs on the field. Chris, how many DBs does this team need? Do you want 4 down linemen and 7 DBs?
I don't know if I want 7 DBs, but I think you need a good amount of DBs, you know, just going in this pass-heavy movement that is college football. You're going to have a lot of teams in the Pac-12 that are going to try to throw it on you. I think you need a good depth and selection of defensive backs out there. I don't think their depth is great, and I think they're trying to improve it with this last class and then obviously bringing in 2 transfers. And you lost a guy in Max Williams. That's a key guy you lost. I think you need to replace him. He was like your guy when you moved to those dime packages, a co-starter, as we mentioned. So I think you need guys like this. You need experienced guys like this. You have those 3 freshmen you're bringing along. But I think it helps to have guys who have already been through a year in college, like an Xavier Alford or a Chris Thompson Jr. So I'm not worried about them bringing in more DBs. I think it is going to change a little bit what you see them do in the 2020 recruiting class, because you do take that spot up. And it's not like these guys are grad transfers. They have 1 year. They have multiple years. So that's, you're essentially taking up a spot in next year's class. So I still think, I know they're going to be targeting their one big safety target, Zion Branch out of Las Vegas. He's probably the number one target right now to bring in for the defensive backfield. So does change a little bit what you're doing recruiting wise, but I think you need the bodies now after losing a guy like Max.
And you need some bodies at cornerback. We'll see, you know, what they look like when they get everybody healthy and then get Sierra Wright and Prophet Brown in there. You know, what's the depth there? Are you going to move some guys? You know, is a guy like Dorian Hewitt back out at cornerback versus safety? You know, do you see some more movement like Kalana Makala moving down to the linebacker spot? You know, is the Dante Williams and Craig Nivar show just going to continue to recruit guys and then be like, yeah, we'll just put them in different positions?
We'll find a home for them.
So it may be 4 down linemen and 7 originally DBs and now playing a different position. I wouldn't be surprised if some 3rd and long, you could put 4 and 7 out there. You may see some packages. You know, you could do that for sure with the pass rushers they have and then the DBs, as long as those DBs can blitz too, because you want to keep that option as well.
Relatively quick, Shotgun.
That was relatively quick.
All right, fair enough.
Cam said, do you see Stephen Carr getting drafted? I hope that he can show in Indiana that he's a man ready for the big show.
This is like an interesting, it's kind of like an over-under. Like, drafted, not drafted. I'm going to say drafted.
Interesting.
I think we know what kind of talent he has, and we've said this, I'm tired of saying this, but the whole back thing. He had the back injury, and he's been working his way, I don't even want to say working his way back because he's back, but it's like he's still trying to find that gear he had as a freshman. I don't think it's ever coming back, but if he could be like 80% of what he was, you know, I think you only get healthier. You could be healthier 3 years removed from back surgery than you are 1 year removed from back surgery. So I think we've seen like gradual glimpses of him getting back to that form. Will he ever? I don't think so. But I think he has enough where you could showcase himself, especially at like a good program like Indiana that's had a really good season last year and is like...
So funny to hear. Especially if he goes to a good program like Indiana from one that's really struggled to produce running backs like USC.
Wow.
That's what you just
imagine,
said.
Yeah, I know I did. Imagine listening to that 10 years ago.
I mean, just a good program like Indiana. Imagine hearing that 2 years ago.
I said like an up-and-coming program. It had a good season. But I see what you're saying.
No, they're doing a great job. And Stephen Carr is actually the first former five-star to ever enter their program.
Interesting.
That's crazy to me.
I think Dylan's going to change that.
It could. Definitely could. Especially if he produces with Stephen Carr to begin with and then the younger running backs that they have. They were already producing when he was there the first time. Tevin Coleman came from that program.
He put dudes out, and I think he's well-respected. Obviously, having been in the NFL now for a couple of years with the Kansas City Chiefs, I think he's well-respected by people there. And when they come to do those interviews and talk to them, I think if he puts his name on it, like Stephen Carr, I think you'll see him get drafted.
Honestly, if Stephen Carr has a big season, I think that's going to be huge for Indiana going forward for Dylan McCullough to get in the next five-star running back or something like that. Yeah. So you present some good points. However, I'm going to say no. I don't think he gets drafted just because it's the running back position has been so devalued.
But I think that's wouldn't that make a case for like people want to scoop up. You're not taking them high, but you can get some good running backs later.
You can, but you can also get like it seems like you can get a guy in the third round that used to be, you know, a top 15 guy now. So I think that pushes everything down. So if Stephen Carr going into the season, you're like maybe he gets drafted and it would be a sixth or seventh rounder. 10 years ago, I think he gets pushed down to be an undrafted free agent. I don't know. I hope for him to have the best of luck out there. Great kid. Always enjoy talking to him. It's been fun watching him, you know, since his 7-on-7 days in high school, since like a sophomore. So hoping that he has success with Dylan McCullough and they can reunite and put it together. Michael Castillo, a friend of the pod, said, since Chris reps Maryland and Shotgun likes baseball caps, what's your favorite Orioles cap logo?
I liked the one that has the field and then the classic bird. It's not a cartoon bird. It's like a real-life Oriole with the O's, Orioles in the middle. That's what I like.
Cal Ripken
logo. Yeah, I like that one. That's the one I grew up with.
I like the cartoon head, actually, so... That's the one I
have.
Nothing
wrong with the cartoon. Yeah.
So I think that's what I would go with. He also asked, what USC jersey number do you find the third most iconic behind 55 and 42? Which I thought this was interesting that those are the two numbers that you would say are the most iconic. I think maybe you could go those are the most iconic that are in usage. But there's also those seven numbers, 6.5, I guess you would say, that are out of service, that are retired because of
retired, air quotes. Visual bit. Need to get one in.
They're retired because of the Heisman Trophy winners that USC has.
Also, I think this is kind of like a Michael wanting us to do like a plug for him because, as you know, Raina Troy does a lot of the number stuff, and they have this piece where they rank the best number for every 1 through 100. They can go look at all the numbers, so go check that out. But I would probably say 5.
I mean, how could you not say 5? I don't know anyone else that's worn it besides Reggie Bush.
It's just Reggie Bush. Like, you think of 5, you think of Reggie Bush.
But it's still the most, I mean, when you picture a USC jersey now, I think you see number 5. I think that's been the case for over 15 years now. I think if you look at it, you know, you just, like, draw a USC jersey, any kid would put a number 5 on it. Like, if they were supposed to put a number on there. Now, if you're talking about in service, we'll say in service, because the 5 has not been in service. They've held it, even though his number is not up on the peristyle currently, which hopefully that comes back. But in service, I think the number is 2. You've had Robert Woods, you've had Adoree Jackson, Taylor Mays, Steve Smith. I mean, there's been a number of terrific players that have worn that in the last 20 years. I don't know if it has the longevity of some other numbers, but the number 2 has definitely been a classic recently. And Jackson Dart, could he be the next great one to wear number 2?
He's in a premier position, so he's going to have a chance to raise that stock even more.
Yep.
So I think 2 is a great pick, especially if we're talking like in-service numbers.
Number 1 has been a good number, too.
Number 1 also a good number. Classic number.
Yeah, so there's some good options out there. But I'm a little confused by the question, Michael, just because... There's the 20, the 32, the 33, 12, a couple of 3, 11, and the 5. I think those are the 7 that are up, that should be up on the peristyle end. So the number 5 is definitely the number 1, though. B. Miller asks, where does USC stand with JT Tuimoloau? Is there a possible chance USC can sign him, or does he go to Ohio State? I mean,
go ahead, do your plug.
go to the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast, Brendan Huffman, who did actually update me on whether there is a big baby alert.
Oh, my God.
It's something that I asked on this podcast, you know, is there an actual big baby alert for him, you know, when the hospitals get
big babies,
you know, a large kid that comes out? Like, do they just go ahead and hit up Brendan Huffman and be like, gotta let you know, class of 2052.
Big baby alert.
He said that there is not a big baby alert. However, he does get a big kid alert from a lot of parents, you know, in first or second or third grade.
That's something. So, that's something.
You can go listen to the Heard on the Sidelines podcast, and he breaks down exactly where USC is with JT Tuimoloau, exactly where Tuimoloau is in his process. He is going to take visits. He is going to, you know, USC, as long as they stay the course. That was the way that he put it. You know, I asked him what USC has to do. He said, stay the course. So you can go get a little bit more details over there. But yes, there is still a possible chance that USC can sign him, and they are still in position. So where they stand with him is still in position. Now, I would still not say that they're the front runner. I feel like that's just because there's been no status change there. I feel like Ohio State's been the front runner until he takes the visits and goes and sees these schools. Then we'll find out a little bit more. JP, which of the 15 fall newcomers, freshmen, and transfers are you excited for, not named Corey Foreman?
I'm also going to say not Michael Trigg, because we talked about him a lot. So I'm going to add
that.
That
one's yours for sure. So you're just cutting off your choice.
And you, in case you were going to pick that one.
That's not going to be my choice.
Okay, well, I'm just putting it out there. Those are the two like headliners for the summer. So let's cut both of those out. Do you have yours?
I have mine.
And go for it, because I don't have mine.
I've already mentioned mine on the show. Taj Washington. Taj Washington is a guy, I want to see how they use him. Is he as dynamic as I think he can be from watching some of the highlights and stuff? I think he could be a weapon for them.
That's a good one. I think I'm going to go a little bit like sneakier on this one. I think I'm going to say Joseph Manjack.
Oh.
Just because Joseph Manjack seems like a...
video game numbers.
And like sort of like an anomaly, like a not like a ghost, but like an urban legend. Like, I just want to see the man jack in person. I want to see,
honestly, like, you look at his numbers, you look at his attributes, and you feel like he's a creative player,
right? I don't think he's real. I mainly just want to see him because I don't think he's real. I want to see this what, like 6'4", 6'3" pogo stick, mm-hmm, number versatile dude. I just want to see him up close in person. I just want to see what he looks like in this offense. And they need some more size on the outside, so I think he could bring that. So I'm excited to see Manjack. I know he's not the highest rated of this class, but I think he's an intriguing guy that they pulled out of Texas. So I'm going to go with the Manjack.
If I was picking a freshman, I would pick Prophet Brown, because he's a guy that I haven't seen. I think that's part of the intrigue for you with Manjack, is we haven't seen these guys in person to, you know, get a full assessment ourselves. But I want to see what Prophet Brown is as a cornerback, a guy that we had, you know, listed as a running back throughout pretty much his entire tenure in the database until, you know, he committed to USC and they were like, you know, he's coming in as a DB. So I want to see what he looks like initially and what he looks like after fall camp, after Dante gets his hands on him a little bit. So I think that's an interesting one for me too. Can he get in that mix? Is he right in that mix at cornerback? Keely, coming to you from the frozen tundra of Hawaii. I don't know why we couldn't just do the show live in Hawaii, but someone didn't invite us, so that's why Keely...
She doesn't get service on the beach.
Oh, that's why she was not on the show this week.
With a Mai Tai in her hand.
I could use one of those. What was your first impression of each other?
Interesting. She has stolen this question from me, so I do not appreciate that, but... And this question has the ability to go deep and get those thoughts out there. But I'm going to keep it short. I thought Shotgun is very intimidating.
Ooh.
Just because Shotgun, it comes off as very, like, confident. He knows what he's saying. He knows what he's asking. He stands there with authority. So he is sort of like an intimidating figure, and he's extroverted. I would say he's extroverted. He can talk to anyone. He can have a conversation with anyone. I am not like that. I'm introverted. he's the opposite of me in that sense. So people like that intimidate me on initial meeting because they have this ability to be dropped into any situation and thrive and like control a room. When we road trip to Arizona, we got an Airbnb and there was a party going on because we stayed in the back half of this dual house. And these people, these were like college kids from a local Christian school, which is just a wild story in itself. But they invited us to the party and we went to the party afterward. And then Shotgun was like randomly holding court with these people, asking him wisdom and advice about like dating and stuff and just making friends and being the man on campus. And he was doing it like they paid him to come here and do this. Like they found him on Craigslist or something to like, and he was just holding court by the pool. And then we watched a man almost kill himself by trying to do a backflip to impress somebody. And he just totally biffed it. Just like did not connect.
Faceplant.
Did not connect.
Oh my God. I thought there was going to be an ambulance.
Standing back tuck. No Drake Jackson. There was no Drake Jackson there that night. This man totally overflipped it, hit his face super hard on the ground. And it was just, that's what I remember about that night. And that's how I would describe Shotgun. Just someone who can be dropped into a party and just command a room. So intimidating is my first thing. But now we're Helium Boys, so that's where it's at. Helium Boys for life. I didn't want to get into that big of a thing, but that's where my answer took me.
I think the number one advice I gave that night is never try to do any kind of acrobatics when you've been drinking. I don't know why. Don't try to do a backflip. If you've had one sip, just be like, yeah, I'll do one tomorrow.
Yeah, sober up.
Not the time to
do it. And I think he was trying to impress a girl.
I bet her first impression was not a very good one there. My first impression of Chris was like, who is this dude? Why is he not coming over to talk to anyone? Does he actually work for our site or what? What's going on here?
I'm like a spider. Understand. I'm more scared of you than you are of me. That's how I...
Because technically Chris works for 24/7. We technically work for Ryan.
I'm a stepchild.
Yeah, so that's part of the reason why he's a cousin of the pod. I was like, does this guy work with us? Is he just going to be off doing his own thing? That was kind of my first impression. Like, what is going on here? But Helium Boys for life.
There we go.
And then our final question comes from Jay. Outside of Jarvis Jones, who was the last transfer out of USC that was a huge loss?
I already had mine right off the cuff. I think it's Bubba Bolden, former four-star safety, highly regarded out of Bishop Gorman. People were excited about him. And then there was some, I don't want to say freak, it's not a freak accident, it's like a freak situation just with like being suspended.
It's and weird. The whole yeah.
Title IX deal. And it just was like, it was a mess, basically what it was. Yep. And then,
the best way to put it, actually.
It would have been hard for him to come back and join the program after what had happened at USC. So it was like, better go our separate ways. And now he's at Miami. I think he's balling out. I think he's got early. He decided to come back for another year. And I think he's already being projected as a potential first round draft pick for next season. Although those, like the first mock drafts after a draft never hold up. So
we'll see where he does this year. Take that
with a huge grain of salt. But I think he's on the right path to being, a high end draft pick. And I think he would have had a real huge impact here if he was still, in a Trojan uniform.
The reason why I don't think that's the correct answer,
okay,
is because USC still had some really good safeties right after that. I think you can look at some other positions where they've struggled right after losing a guy. Kerry Angeline pops out to me because USC struggled at the tight end position as far as catching passes, being a receiving threat. Daniel Amorebebe in a similar vein. Now his obviously was injured, everything else. But I think it goes back a little bit further. I think the true last impact, there's a huge loss, is Malik Jackson. I mean, he's an NFL guy. He's a guy that has gone to the NFL and been a multi-year guy that's, a legit dude. Now, he left after the sanctions came down and, there was free reign that anyone could leave. But I think that's the last really big one that has gone on and had a lot of success. Went to Tennessee and then, was really successful with the Broncos. I don't remember exactly where he is now, but I think that's the the bigger loss there than a guy like Kerry Angeline or even Bubba Bolden.
Okay. I respect your decision. Really going back there.
It's not that far back. It's 10 years. Sanctions were 2009.
That's far back.
It's 12 years. 10 to 12 years. Somewhere in there. Chris, we made it through an episode. So I need your instant analysis of this episode.
I think we made it through an episode. I think it went pretty good, pretty well, pretty smooth. You know, I think there was a little bit of nerve just because we haven't done an official podcast together. I'm shorter than you in terms of speaking. I'm used to maybe having a break, not having to go one-on-one with you, sparring a little bit. But I think it went really, really well. I would love to do another Helium Boys podcast. That's my instant analysis. I think it was a good performance overall. I got my jokes in. I got the laughs in. And I think that's all that really matters.
I mean, I think it was a tremendous performance on the recording side. The editing side, on the other hand, we might struggle a little bit more with. But now we've done both the podcast, hosting the podcast. I'm going to have to do the editing afterwards, but also an instant analysis. So, you know, filling up all the roles Achilles is absent for right now.
I mean, if we're going to do her roles, maybe she could write 90 stories for me. And then we'll call it even for the month.
Or just one that's like 3,000 words from me.
Fair enough. And there is no take it or leave it, just because that's a group thing. I don't like doing that one-on-one. I like doing that all together. But I did have an and one.
And one.
As I've mentioned several times in this podcast, I love picking Shotgun's brain about baseball. And baseball has been...
very, very good to me.
Yes, very, 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 very good to him. But baseball has been in the Twitter sphere recently, particularly about sending a home run on a 3-0 count and then getting plunked the next day, the next game. So I would love your thoughts on that initially. But I also wanted to ask, have you ever broken an unwritten rule of baseball? Or have you ever had to dish payback for someone breaking an unrule in baseball?
Me, myself, I've thrown at someone before.
Oh.
At them, behind them. A little dew got on the ball. The ump came out and I said, it was a little dew on the ball. It was middle of evening in Georgia in the summer, so there's no dew. But that was my response to him. But the unwritten rules and, you know, what's allowed changes a little bit. You know, I threw at someone after they stared down a home run. I'm okay with a bat flip, or I'm okay with whatever, but don't stare down the home run and stare at me. Like, I just gave you a gift of a home run.
Like, he gave you a big juicy meatball over the plate.
I don't need you staring at me.
Staring you down or the ball down?
They looked at the ball first and saw that it was a no-doubt home run, and then stared me down. I was tempted to throw my glove at this person and just charged down the first baseline. But I didn't.
That player's name? Mike Trout?
If it was Mike Trout, I'm like, oh, okay, that happens. My biggest deal with this whole situation is that Tony La Russa is so old school that he was like, yeah, I understand him throwing at him. I don't have a problem with that. I'm like, what? They had a position player pitching. If you give up on the game and you decide, hey, we're not going to use any of our pitchers anymore, then the unwritten rules have gone out of the way. It used to be an unwritten rule that you use your actual players. The fans came to see true baseball, not position players throwing 47 miles an hour up there. You play the game to the end. That was part of the unwritten rules. Well, you're breaking one by throwing this position player and having him throw 47 miles an hour. So don't complain when he hits a 3-0 pitch. You know, I'm going to pad my stats if you put a position player in there. That's how it goes. Don't throw a guy in there if you don't want me to pad my stats. So if it's 3-0, it doesn't matter. The biggest one I have an issue with, and the only one I really still kind of bothers me, is bunting to break up a no-hitter if it's not a close game. If it's a close game, it's a one- or two-run game. Hey, you're trying to get a run on. You're trying to get whatever. But if it's 8 or 9 runs, you know, and you're bunting, that one I'm like, dude, really? And the other one is just stealing bases if you're up a bunch of runs. Like, let's just calm down with the whole base-stealing thing. I also hated it because in college, I get a stolen base on a guy on a pitch out. He was just so fast. I couldn't do anything.
Someone stole home on you?
Not home.
Oh.
But I was like, this guy's about to go. All right, we're gonna pitch out. We're gonna get him. Nope, no chance. Still, he's just too fast.
He's too fast. Makes fast people look not fast.
Exactly.
But you didn't get thrown out for throwing at the dude. You're due.
I didn't hit the guy. So I threw. I think I threw over his head or behind his head or something. I threw well enough away that it wasn't going to hit him, but it was sending the message. I didn't throw hard enough to be sending messages to begin with, so that's why I didn't just hit the guy, because I was like, this isn't going to hurt anybody. So.
Did their bench like, hey?
Probably. I don't remember.
Fair enough. But that's exactly what I wanted. You have thrown at a person who broke an unwritten rule. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Sure. Why not?
Plunk him in the butt?
See, like I said, I'm not hitting anybody. I can't afford any extra base runners. I'm not good enough. And I don't throw hard enough that it's actually going to have an impact. So, like, the whole thing, like, oh, they hit one of our guys, we hit one of them. I'm like, I'm not the guy to hit them. Sorry, guys. Like, we're going to be better off if I just try to get them out.
Yeah. Instead of revenge.
It's like, I might hit them anyways and not be intending to. So, but that's going to wrap it up, I think.
Yeah, I think that's it.
That's going to wrap it up for the Family Feud podcast, the Helium Boys edition. Thank you so much, Chris Trevino, for joining me on this show. And thanks so much to Keely for taking the time off to give us this opportunity.
I really appreciate it, Keely.
Appreciate it, Keels. Again, as a reminder, you guys can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Megaphone. Leave us a 5-star review and tell your friends about the show. Tell us how much you liked us. Also, you can email us questions or submissions to the podcast at familyfeudpod@gmail.com for future episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.